Money and markets. I want to talk first before I go through the market just about some of the posts we've been putting up at Solari. The first post I want to discuss is called Asking for Prayers for the People of Northern California. I can't stress to you enough how extraordinarily stressful what they're dealing with is to have something this strange and unnatural happen. And on this scale is absolutely terrifying. So, one of the things we've been trying to do is post ideas of where you can send your donations. We've sent donations to three different groups, and I've put some more links up, but I would really encourage everybody to keep them in your prayers, reach out, give a donation. If you're out in that area, volunteer, do what you can do, but make a contribution. It's funny. One of the great moments of prayer was when I heard a sermon about how to pray while you're washing the dishes and doing housework. So one of the things I've learned is, there's always time to pray. Cynthia McKinney has put out a new newsletter and has also put out a new function where you can contribute on a regular basis to her monthly. So I went and signed up at her website, and we posted it in Topics. But you can check it out at All Things Cynthia McKinney. That's somebody very worthy of your support. So I encourage you to take a look at that. We have a new special report that we posted this week. When I was out at the Nexus conference, I was struck by how many people are naive or lack knowledge about how the U.S. government taxes cryptocurrencies. So I had one of the law firms I work with prepare a special report on the U.S. taxation policies towards cryptocurrency. If you are speculating in Bitcoin or any other cryptocurrency, it's extremely important that you understand what the tax ramifications are and make sure you are 100% compliant. If you look at how the Bitcoin market is trading, it wouldn't surprise me if, within the next 2 years, you're going to have a major number of the people in that market, in violation of IRS rules, and the IRS is going to have the data which proves that. And if they want to use it, they can. Anyway, this dovetails with the report that Harry Blaser and I did called Bitcoin the Op. And so if you listen to that, I strongly recommend you take a look at the special Solari report as well. It's called How the U.S. Federal Government Handles Taxation for Cryptocurrency. And a big major warning, do not believe that most of the transactions are anonymous. First of all, 70% or more of the people who buy Bitcoin are buying it through an exchange that has their private keys. So there's no anonymity whatsoever. But the other thing is, when you do the transactions and also move money from dollars or other currencies into Bitcoin, that's a point at which your transactions can and will be recorded. So do not think that your transactions are anonymous. I did an interview on InfoWars today and recommended a whole series of different links related to the work we've been doing on how to enforce the Constitution and why it's so important and why a constitutional convention is so bad. All those links are up together. We got I had very productive meetings in Washington. It was interesting to do InfoWar on the missing money from the middle of a Washington hotel. But I had an opportunity to finally meet Dr. Mark Skidmore in person, who's been helping with the missing money documentation and digging out the information from HUD and DOD. And it was great to meet him in person. What an outstanding person and an outstanding scholar. We got one subscriber came in and said they loved the interview with Farrell for the third quarter wrap up, part one, but they didn't understand what the rape of Russia was and would we provide some material. And I had them go back in the archives and look at the two Ann Williamson interviews on the rape of Russia in that we did on the Solari report, but also look at her testimony. And so she was so impressed. Her name is Liberty Jones. She recorded Ann's Rape of Russia, did an audio, so we've posted that, and you can find that at Solari. Ann Williamson's Rape of Russia, recorded by Liberty Jones. But also remember, in the second quarter wrap-up, and you can find it in Just a Taste or just do a search, we put up a section called Saleri Core Concepts, which are great introductions to terms that you might hear at Saleri, like Global 2.0 to 3.0. And if you hear one of those words, then go check it out in Saleri Core Concepts. One of the core concepts we use is what I call shadow work. Shadow work is another way of experiencing inflation, where a variety of organizations and businesses basically make you do more and more work. So now you're having to check out yourself at the grocery store. You're waiting on voicemail, trying to navigate the automation for 20 minutes, on and on and on. But the work piles on, and the same process takes more and more and more of your time. I call it shadow work. And so many people are now experiencing the phenomenon of shadow work that I wanted to remind you that we published a big piece on it in 2015. So I republished it on the website. Okay, let's go through the market. The dollar is continuing to hold that 92 line. It's trading at 93 and a quarter. And so but that's still down almost 9% for the year. But again, holding that $92 line, which is a very important technical line. Fixed income, TLT, long treasury, still very respectable for this year, up 17.18%. The intermediate is traded off. It's now up a little bit less than 3%. Bond aggregate up 3.36%. And junk, very respectable for permanents at 6.88%. The stock market just keeps going up. If you look at the technicals, it's unbelievably overbought. I'm really glad Rambus will be coming on next week with his blockbuster Chartology, or his technical work will be. He doesn't like to give audio, so we'll just have his written work. But the S&P now up 16.06%, which is quite attractive performance so far this year. The European ETF up 25.03%. Developed markets 26, Germany 26.36%, developed markets up 22.25%. The large caps in China up 31.84%, small caps 35%, emerging markets now trailing China 32.26%. Commodities were down 4.83%. Gold has recovered a little bit, back up at 11.66% for the year. Silver 7.68%, and oil still in the doghouse, down 15.48%. Well, the IMF and World Bank meeting in Washington for the 13th, 14th, 15th come and went. And of course, there were no great events like all the fear porn guys promised. And just once, I'd like them to say, guess what, we were wrong, and here's why. But of course, I don't know. You know, for the last 2 months, I've had to beat back fears about the IMF World Bank meeting. And then yet again, it goes by. No one seems to notice afterwards that, oh, that big scary thing wasn't a big scary thing. Russia has announced, talking about big scary things, Russia has announced that they're going to, Putin has given the green light to move forward with a crypto ruble. And my prediction is once they get it going, they're going to back it with gold stored in multiple countries. In the meantime, I put up several links about what's happening in Zug, Switzerland, outside of Zurich. Switzerland is making a very serious effort to become a leader in Bitcoin. As I said before, you know, you can buy a Swiss Federal Railway ticket with Bitcoin and top up your Bitcoin wallet. I doubt you can do that at Amtrak. I put several links about the role of Zug, which is a low tax area, and the related foundations that are being used to basically try and make Switzerland one of the capitals of Bitcoin. A lot of attention was drawn to the role of Zug and the Swiss foundations when one of the ones created from the largest ICO is now running into trouble. It's a very big time in China. Xi Jinping's big moment. The Chinese president kicked off the biggest and most watched event in China's political calendar, which is the National Congress of the Communist Party of China. The Economist just had a very huge spread on the president and announced that he's the most powerful man in the world. One of the things that's stressed, and I saw this in Hong Kong, is the extent to which the Communist Party is trying to assert a more involved role within business. And Xi Jinping is said to be very concerned about what happened in Russia in the 90s and the extent to which sort of oligarchs took over and got too big for their britches and really destroyed the, or participated in the destruction of the civic and common life, creating massive inequality, etc. Now, I would argue it was Harvard and the U.S. intelligence agencies were deep partnerships in the, or deep partners in the process. But, you know, whatever happened, he's watching both what happened in Russia, the rape of Russia, and he's watching what's going on in the United States, and he wants to make sure that that doesn't happen in China. And but at the same time, it's having a very chilling effect on business in Hong Kong. I could see and feel it there is the sort of the Chinese Communist Party moved in. So this is a, this kind of meeting is a huge planning exercise. It'll be very interesting to see what's coming out of it. There's no doubt that the Chinese are managing quite a difficult situation, particularly when you have AI and automation coming that could threaten jobs, because that's a very large population. And the Chinese have depended on exports to Europe and the United States to keep that population employed. And now you're going to need you're going to need far more consumer demand from Asia itself to sort of rebalance and make more self-sufficient anyway. So it's, they have quite a balancing act, but at the same time, the you know, sort of the tricky line is where's the division between business and government, and how do you keep the business sector dynamic without creating the kind of oligarch problem that Russia had. Steve Mnuchin announced this week that the stock market will tank without tax reform. Everybody knows it, but having the Secretary of Treasury say it, and in fact, we've seen in the past, we believe, flash crashes in the market really specifically designed to scare Congress into going along with this, passing this law or that law. The president is in the process of interviewing candidates for the chairmanship of the Fed. Yellen is not an automatic renewal. And what's interesting is one of the Mnuchin's favorite candidate is none other than Jerome Powell, which is an old colleague of mine from Dillon Reed. And it's interesting to watch because Powell is basically a Brady guy. Brady was the chairman of Dillon Reed and then became Secretary of the Treasury. Brady went to Yale. So did his friend George H.W. Bush. So did Mnuchin. Bush and Mnuchin were in Skull and Bones together. And so it's very interesting to see Mnuchin, Skull and Bones pushing Powell, and I suspect it's coming from the Bush-Brady line one way or the other. What's interesting is when the money started to go missing at HUD and DOD, suddenly money was pouring into Carlyle Group, including a big China fund and Asia private investment funds. And I kept thinking, where are they getting all this money? You know, so money's disappearing from HUD and DOD, and then voila, Carlyle has massive amounts of money along with some other firms. And what's interesting is Powell got moved into Carlyle in 1997, just as the money was going missing from HUD and landing at Carlyle. It was very interesting. You almost wonder if he wasn't placed there for part of that play. You know, definitely if my theory is correct that Carlyle was helping to launder some of the money. That's just a theory. I could no more prove it. I couldn't prove it in a court of law, but Well, give me subpoena power, and it'd be interesting to see what I can prove. Anyway, so now Powell's at the Fed, but he's said to be Mnuchin's top pick for the New York Fed chairman to replace Yellen. Now, if you look at his filings when he first was appointed to the Fed, Powell's net worth at that time totaled, after being a Carlyle Group partner, his net worth totaled on the form anywhere from $21 to $72 million, which tells me helping to launder the missing money was very delicious business financially. But I find it very interesting that somebody who I believe was implicated by the missing money is being promoted by the Yale guys to go into the Fed at this time. Now Cohen was a leader in engineering those flows as well at Goldman, because Goldman was the real, I think, the real sort of major genius behind figuring out how to suppress the gold price and bubble the housing market. Problem is, he's too obvious, having been at Goldman Sachs, and there's been too much tension between him and the president, so I think it's not going to be Cohen. But everywhere you turn, what you're seeing is people who made all their bones in the financial coup stealing and laundering taxpayers' money. Now, that's my opinion. I can't prove it, but it doesn't smell good. But between if Powell goes in as chairman at the Fed, we're just the whole missing money team is going to be there. Las Vegas, we're watching more and more videos and witnesses come out. Clearly, there were multiple shooters. It was not one shooter. Clearly, the official story makes no sense. The unanswered questions keep piling up. My favorite was from our teammate James Quaid this week when he said, "Where was the Mandalay security team? Let's face it, on a good day, they could take out Portugal," meaning, at the casinos, you have pretty amazing security and pretty sophisticated security. One subscriber pointed out that the top five floors of the Mandalay Bay are owned by a Saudi prince and Bill Gates. So, if you look at who's swinging around there and how much money there is, you're talking about pretty significant security teams, and the fact that they just didn't show up and seem to disappear, all very strange. One of the survivors who claimed that there was multiple gunmen involved in the shooting was found dead last week, and that's made quite a noise. Apparently she was talking on social media about putting together a group that was going to, people who'd been there was going to figure out what was going on. Anyway, what we've had, you've heard me talk about whiteout before, about having scandals that white out the real news and the real things they don't want you to hear about, like the missing money, like what's really happened in Las Vegas. So a lot of these things are being whited out. And one of the things whiting things out is the Harvey Weinstein scandal. I won't talk about it because we discussed it last week. But now we have clearly Weinstein was not enough to white out what needed to be whited out, particularly what's going on in California and Las Vegas. So instead, what we now have is the Uranium One deal is back. For those of you who were subscribers during the campaign, the New York Times did a very serious treatment, a very really a fine piece of investigative journalism about the fact that the Russians bought 20% of the U.S. uranium stock, and that deal was approved by Clinton and Eric Holder and the Obama administration. If you look at how the money worked and how much money was then kicked back or laundered into the Clinton Foundation and money to Bill Clinton to make a speech, the whole thing stinks to high hell. I can't fathom that if you did a proper investigation, you wouldn't have indictments flying of Holder, Clinton, even theoretically Obama. Anyway, but it's interesting. You see incredible unfairness around this. Trump and the had a conference with a press conference with the head of Puerto Rico today, who he was meeting with, and at the end of the press conference, somebody asked him a question about the Uranium One story, and he gave a reasonably good response. And then I found out about it when the headline was, Trump goes on a bizarre Oval Office rant about what he calls the real Russia story. It wasn't a rant. He just answered the question. And it's interesting, one of the things he said was that the Uranium One deal is a huge scandal, and it is a huge scandal. And it's a perfect example of sort of a pay-for-play network, which is what I think the Clinton Foundation was. Now, how serious is the Uranium One scandal for Hillary Clinton? It's not a good sign, because what it shows, you know, Weinstein is being used as whiteout because he's expendable. And if they start using Clinton for whiteout, it means she's potentially expendable. Now, if you look at what they've done so far, you know, it's going to be a lot of noise. It'll be painful to a reputation, but, you know, you're not talking about indictments, even though Grassley says he's investigating in the Congress and Sessions says he's investigating it at Department of Justice. But the reality is, if they're willing to start down this road, if they really need to, it means they'll go all the way. And sure enough, Clinton could get indicted and go to jail. Now, it's just too early to tell if this turns serious or not. But if you look at the facts, they're all there to turn it serious if somebody wants to. And I suspect it really depends on how much weight out they need. You know, if you look at what's going on for the last two, four, 6 weeks, you know, they could have serious need for much greater whiteout. Now, under the category, you just can't make this stuff up, the CIA is asking Trump to delay making Kennedy assassination documents public. So, you know, we're talking about many decades since 1963. And so at a certain period of time, these documents are supposed to automatically be made available, but the CIA is asking Trump to delay. Now, David Talbot has already solved the mystery of what happened, I believe. And I would really encourage, if you haven't read his book or listened to the interview we did with him on the Salieri Report, it's just a mind-bending, it's a mind-bending discussion, but I think he's really nailed the story. And the reality is the CIA has a lot to hide. So it looks like they're going to get Trump to help them hide it for some more time.